Welcome to the reading of today's sports section from the Richmond Times-Dispatch. I'm Thomas Eichler for the Virginia Voice. Well, hello everyone, and happy Sunday to you. It is Sunday, April 21st, 2024. Welcome to our expanded edition of the RTD Sports Page, our one-hour edition. And like most Sundays, we need an hour to cram in all the news that we've got here. This is spring football time around the country. Colleges have had their spring practices, and many, including Notre Dame yesterday, had their spring game. And the University of Virginia held their spring game as well in Charlottesville. So that's going to be our lead story in just a sec. But I'll also tell you that we have playoff basketball and hockey just getting underway. The NBA playoffs started in earnest last night. The 7 and 8 seeds are finally decided in the little play-in tournament that they have for this sort of thing. And the first round has started. And hockey, they began as well. And they have still a few games to complete, including the Washington Capitals starting today. They'll have their first game against the Rangers in New York, in the garden, as they say. But let's start with the UVA spring game on page one. Receiver Wilson springs forward for Cavaliers. Receiver makes up for drop with long TD. QB Musket also shines. This is by Greg Medea for the Daily Progress. J.R. Wilson spent the winter redeeming himself, becoming the player Virginia coaches repeatedly praised throughout the spring for being the program's most improved since the conclusion of this past season. So it was fitting on Saturday that the Cavaliers' annual blue-white spring game at Scott Stadium featured some additional redemption from the wide receiver. He let a would-be touchdown reception slip through his hands on a go route during the very first play the white team ran on offense. "When you first mess up, it kind of haunts you and you keep thinking about it," Wilson said. "But I've got that next play mentality, and I just had to really fight forward to the next play and make some production." And on Wilson's subsequent opportunity, the 6'4", 219-pound pass catcher from Brooklyn displayed what UVA coach Tony Elliott and the Cavaliers' assistants raved about over the last month. Wilson leaped to catch a zipped pass from quarterback Tony Musket at its highest point after Musket maneuvered behind the line of scrimmage to get the throw off. When Wilson came down with the ball, he didn't hesitate and turned, shedding a defender before racing for a 56-yard touchdown. The points were the first of the scrimmage and served as the catalyst in the Whites' 17-10 win over the Blue. "Great to see him respond," Elliott said. "He had a great spring. He's a guy that we saw flashes as soon as we got here 2 years ago, and it's taken time for him to figure things out, but he's really comfortable in the system. He sees an opportunity to have a big role, and I'm really, really pleased and proud of the spring he's had." Wilson, who had all of 10 catches for 98 yards in 2023, finished Saturday with 3 catches for 79 yards and a touchdown. He said, "Today solidified what I can do going into the fall with the whole change of a new JR." Musket said that drop from Wilson early was probably the only drop Wilson had all spring. The signal caller would know, too, considering Wilson said the pair have developed a strong cohesion, having worked together for more than a year. Musket was crisp and efficient during the contest and capped this spring by completing 10 of 18 throws for 200 yards and 2 touchdowns. His second TD came when he connected with 5'11 walk-on receiver Claiborne Richards, streaking down the seam for a 73-yard score late in the first quarter to grow the Whites' edge to 14-0. "He wasn't sure if he'd be able to do much as he did this spring," Elliott said about Musket, the quarterback who started 6 games this past fall, but missed the 6 others because of shoulder and ankle injuries and then had shoulder surgery during the campaign. But he attacked his rehab, Elliott continued, was ahead of schedule, so we were able to get good quality work this spring from him, and he comes out here today and shows what we saw flashes of. In the second quarter, Musket's best play came on 4th and 4 inside blue territory when he escaped pressure before finding Wilson again for an 18-yard gain. That drive ended with a field goal with 2:29 left in the half to grow the edge to 14 points again after the blue finally got on the board with a field goal of its own midway through the period. The Blues' offense stalled in large part because of the Whites' defensive line, which was anchored by veteran starters Chico Bennett Jr. and Jameer Carter. Bennett had 7 tackles, 2 sacks, and 3 tackles for a loss. "It's a night and day difference," Bennett said in regard to how he feels now compared to the fall when he tried to play through shoulder pain. Blue quarterback Anthony Calandrio was sacked 3 times total and was 15 of 16 for 102 yards, while mostly having to get the ball out quickly because of the pressure. It was a little unfair to Calandrio sometimes with the way the rosters worked out a little bit up front, offensive coordinator Des Kitchings said. But he's had a good spring and done a better job taking care of the football as the spring progressed. The highlight for Blue didn't come until the end of the third quarter, when Sudarian Harrison returned a punt for a 90-yard touchdown. Harrison also had 4 catches for 49 yards. Defensive coordinator John Rudzinski served as the Whites coach, and quarterback's coach Taylor Lamb was the Blues coach. With a smile and a chuckle afterward, Rudzinski said, "I'll take any win. Shoot, I don't like losing in checkers. Even if it's against my 5-year-old, I'm going to make sure I win." So, you know, spring is when hope, quote-unquote, springs eternal for everyone. It's like the beginning of the baseball season. You know, wait till next year. And once next year comes, everybody starts the year with the same record. Well, you know, you're playing against yourself, basically, in spring football. But... you know, you don't want to look like a complete mess. And that certainly was not the case with the Cavaliers yesterday. They looked good, and as Greg Bedia noted, Tony Musket looked crisp and efficient. So, all good. And Mike Barber was on hand as well. Mike's got some thoughts to go along with Greg's article. Elliott wants to ground and pound. This is by Mike Barber for the RTD Dateline Charlottesville. Since arriving in Virginia, Tony Elliott has made it clear what he wants his football team's offensive identity to be, and that starts with a game-controlling running game. Saturday, during a spring game where a lack of available offensive linemen made running the ball against a deep and veteran defensive front challenging, redshirt freshman Noah Vaughn, all 5'8", 188 pounds of him, offered a good glimpse of what Elliott is after. "The kid's really tough," offensive coordinator Des Kitchings said. "You look at his stature. You gotta be something it's got to be something that separates him from everybody else, and that's what it is. His competitive nature and his toughness." Vaughn carried a game-high 11 times Saturday, picking up 50 yards. He also caught 3 short passes. Perhaps most encouragingly, when Vaughn was met by a defender, usually one who had a size advantage, he pushed forward, fighting for extra yards. "That's the mindset of our running back room," Vaughn said. "The first guy's not going to take us down. We're going to always get some more yards out of it." Elliott and Kitchings are wrapping up their 3rd spring working to instill that tough, run-first offensive identity. It's still very much a work in progress. using a zone-blocking scheme that requires the linemen and backs to move in well-timed unison, UVA has struggled to run the football in Elliott's first two seasons. In 2022, Virginia ranked 11th in the ACC, running for 123.2 yards per game. It was 9th in yards per carry at 3.7 and 10th in rushing touchdowns with 10. Last season, the production was even worse. The Cavaliers ranked next to last in the league in rushing yards per game at 117.9 yards per game, last at 3.1 yards per carry, and next to last in rushing touchdowns with 12. For Elliott, a former offensive coordinator at Clemson, to see marked improvement in year three of his tenure, one that has produced a 6-16 record to date, those numbers have to get better. I think the guys are starting to understand what we're trying to get accomplished, Elliott said. By his own admission, Saturday wasn't the best evidence of the progress Elliott and Kitchings believe is being made toward establishing that offensive identity. Four of the team's top five offensive linemen missed the game due to injuries. And Virginia has also worked this spring without two of its returning running backs in Xavier Brown and Jack Greasy. The makeshift offensive lines UVA cobbled together for the blue and white teams, only junior tackle Blake Steen is a likely starter among those who suited up on Saturday, were overmatched by the Cavaliers' defensive line, a veteran group that returns established stars and ends Chico Benton, Cam Butler, and tackle Jameer Carter. Vaughn and redshirt freshman Dante Hawthorne were bright spots Saturday, but in the fall, Virginia will need Kobe Pace, who transferred from Clemson before the 2023 season, to be, in Kitching's words, the bell cow. The 5'10", 215-pound Georgia native, who had a 15-yard run Saturday, has added more muscle to his frame and a more physical approach to his game. A year after coaches emphasized his big play ability, calling him a quote-unquote rocket, the talk about Pace on Saturday was decidedly different. I saw Kobe take a Pace as an efficient runner, those dirty yards, Kitching said, getting behind his pads. There might be contact at three and gets two or three more yards. Those are the yards that make the difference between moving the chains and spending games behind them. And becoming a team that gets those yards is the identity Elliott has been pushing for. Well, there you have it. That's a very focused look at what Tony Elliott wants from his UVA Cavaliers going forward, and that is to pound the ball on the ground, which, of course, opens things up for Tony Muscat and Anthony Calandria on the passing scheme. The one name in these two articles that I did not hear, surprisingly, was Chris Tyree, who played at Notre Dame for 3 years. He's from the local area here, I think from Hopewell. And Chris transferred for his final year of eligibility to UVA and didn't hear a peep in both of these articles. So maybe he was held out. Don't know. But Chris Tyree could be a very big part of this offense this year with his skill as a running back, a receiver, and a return man. So heading back to page one, David Teal was on hand yesterday in Charlottesville and has a different look at the spring game than what you just heard from Greg Medea and Mike Barber. Touchbacks as key as touchdowns for UVA. This is by David Teal for the RTD Dateline Charlottesville. Even by spring game standards, the sequences were routine and forgettable. But for Virginia's football team, the potential implications for the 2024 season were extra large. Four times Saturday at Scott Stadium, Daniel Sparks kicked off. All of them sailed into the end zone with three producing touchbacks, in the White Squad 17-10 victory over the Blue. 'Twas an unusual sight last season when, once again, the kicking game was an anvil around the team's neck. And if the Cavaliers are to produce their first winning record since the 2019 Orange Bowl season, that anvil must be cut loose. Yes, other areas also beg for improvement, chief among them rushing offense and rushing defense. But special teams often can turn games and seasons more rapidly. Collectively, as a program, we got to take more ownership, want to, desire, passion for special teams, and understanding that it's a third of the game, third-year coach Tony Elliott said earlier this spring. Those are plays that make a difference, so I've got to do a great job as a head coach of changing the mindset of this program that it starts with special teams before we move on to offense and defense. Enter Sparks. Preparing for his third and final season as UVA's punter, but his first as the kickoff specialist. Even with Sparks as the second team All-ACC punter in 2022, the Cavaliers' special teams did more harm than good. They were worse last season. James Madison and Louisville blocked Sparks' punts for touchdowns. Moreover, Maryland and Virginia Tech even returned a Matt Ganyard kickoff for a touchdown, making Virginia the nation's lone bowl subdivision team to yield multiple touchdowns on punts and kickoffs. Not coincidentally, the Cavaliers lost each of those four games. A 34-year-old walk-on and former Marine, Matt Ganyard was among college football's best stories last season, but only 20 of his 58 kickoffs resulted in touchbacks, a 34.8% rate that ranked 102nd nationally. Distance and ball location, special teams coordinator Keith Gaither said of how Virginia could improve kickoff coverage in 2024. We've got guys that can run and cover. We really do. Sparks' most recent kickoff experience was in 2020 at Louisiana Monroe, where his 33 attempts netted a scant 6 touchbacks. 4 years later, his right leg is markedly stronger, and prior to this spring's practices, he approached special teams analyst Drew Meyer, a former All-Big Ten punter at Wisconsin, with the idea of adding kickoffs to his duties, which also include holding for placements. It took them a second to get on board, Sparks said. But Sparks subsequently outperformed Elijah Slyback to earn the top spot on the depth chart entering preseason camp in 4 months. His leg strength was evident Saturday, even on an opening kickoff that only went 2 yards deep into the end zone, and which Trell Harris returned to the 19, well shy of the touchback line at the 25. It's been amazing to learn and practice it, get better at it, Sparks said. I think in the end, by season's time, I'll be ready to go. Rather than kick from the standard 35-yard line when he practices, Sparks challenges himself at the 30, figuring any boot into the end zone is touchback worthy, and that is always the goal. As many times as they can't return it, Sparks says, the better off we are. Sparks averaged 48.5 yards on 6 punts Saturday, with a long of 56, and was never pressured, standard in a spring game. He attributed last year's 2 blocked punts to unit-wide breakdowns. I think it was just a mixture of everything, he said. Obviously, our operations time could have been better. I wouldn't blame it fully on the protection. After a Week 3 loss at Maryland, where the Terps halved Virginia's 14-7 lead with a kickoff return for a touchdown, Elliott vowed to fix the Cavaliers' special teams. It didn't happen. This spring, Gaither said Elliott has been more involved with the kicking game, and that the staff, quote, has done a better job coaching it. He needs to be right. Special teams are big time, Sparks said. People forget about it, but it's big time. Well, there you have it. A completely different look at the UVA team. Special teams, and these, David stated this in the article here, that actually, I guess Tony Elliott is the one who said it, but David reported it, that special teams comprise one-third of the game. Offense, defense, special teams. So if you have one that consistently doesn't show up, it makes things a whole lot more difficult. And we all know that, you know, UVA can't afford to make things more difficult than they already are. So we'll see if Daniel Sparks is the answer that Tony Elliott is hoping for. The Hoos, by the way, open their season on August 31st at home in Scott Stadium, entertaining Ross Huseman and the Richmond Spiders. Moving back to page one here, as many of you remember, Kurt Cignetti moved on from Harrisonburg and James Madison to become the big whistle at Indiana University in Bloomington. And the Dukes had to find themselves a new football coach. And they did that fairly quickly. And we have that story on page one. Dukes are adjusting to off-season upheaval. JMU has new coach, a new system, and lots of new players. This is by Savannah Rieger for the RTD Dateline Harrisonburg. There was something different about the energy in Bridgeforth Stadium on Saturday afternoon. Something new. During James Madison's spring football game, new faces, energy, and fire oozed from every direction. New coach Bob Chesney was on display. The Dukes' new basketball coach, Preston Spradlin, was introduced. And new athletic director Mark Rowan was on the field for the coin toss. That's what made this spring season more important than perhaps others for JMU. In almost all facets, there's something new, and it means there's a learning curve and mistakes to work through. Being able to get almost a camp in between when the season ends to when it starts is huge, Eric O'Neill, a transfer from Long Island University, said, especially because of how new we are. So having this, I think, is huge. Following the end of the 2023 season, JMU went through its fair share of roster turnover and was hit by the transfer portal. Chesney took over after Kurt Cignetti left for Indiana and brought in quarterback Dylan Morris, a Washington transfer. So on the docket for the spring game was a first look at this new team and how much they've gelled. And at the spring game, there was a new format compared to years past, and that format led to heightened energy, competitiveness, and Chesney said, a strong practice. I think we did a nice job. There was a couple of really clean run plays, Chesney said. We had a couple of things inside that I thought opened up really nicely, and our guys did a good job of putting their pads down, protecting the football. Chesney has navigated a new staff and a new set of players coming into the program. All of those came together at Bridgeforth Stadium on Saturday. What was important for the new coach, too, was fan involvement, he said. Compared to spring games of the past, there was more energy among the players with one-on-one drills taking place between quarters. I thought it was a pretty great atmosphere, Chesney said. I think it all gave us a little taste of what game day is like. The offense beat the defense 30-29 following a successful two-point conversion. Redshirt sophomore quarterback Blake Kendall threw a pass to freshman wide receiver Dylan Williams, who is one of the players who came to JMU early, leaving before his final semester in high school. Morris played in a few series in the first half. He ran for a 4-yard touchdown in the second quarter. Morris said he's adjusted well to Chesney's system. Morris added he's been through several new systems before, so he's figured out how to come in and get to work. I know that things have to accelerate pretty quickly, Morris said. As a quarterback, especially, you have to be viewed as a leader and just coming in and building relationships as fast as I could. This is my fourth offense, so I've been able to learn that pretty quickly. Now, with spring practice over, Chesney said that minus some community events and another week of work, his team will part for the summer before coming back and getting ready for the season. O'Neill said things to tighten up for the fall include just learning the entire team. With so much change in the program and at the school since the bowl game, the Dukes are still getting acclimated with each other. That group needs chemistry, Chesney said, and continuing to learn the system is key. JMU kicks off its season at Charlotte on August 31st. There's going to be tight games. You have to find ways to play competitive football, Chesney said. All that matters is one day at a time. So there you have it, a first look at the new look, James Madison Dukes, under the new whistle, Bob Chesney, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun to see how James Madison grows over the course of the season. Okay, we are going to stay inside the RTD for these next couple of pieces here, and we're going to stick with football. And this is a bit of an homage. Roman Gabriel, a former North Carolina State quarterback who was the 1969 NFL MVP with the Los Angeles Rams, died Saturday at 83 of natural causes. Gabriel was a two-time player of the year in the ACC, both 1960 and 61, while at NC State, becoming the first ACC quarterback to throw for 1,000 yards in a season. He was the number 2 overall draft pick of the Rams, where he played from 1962 to 72, before playing with Philadelphia from 73 to 77. He was the MVP in 1969, throwing for 2,549 yards and 24 touchdowns to go along with 5 rushing scores. He was a Pro Bowl pick 4 times. He threw for 22,223 yards and 154 touchdowns in his 11-year career with the Rams, leaving that franchise as its career passing leader. He was inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame in 1989. So, rest in peace, Roman Gabriel. He was one of my earliest memories of pro football. Going right back to his rookie year in 1962, I was a 10-year-old kid. And I think it was the uniqueness of his name. It's the only person I knew whose first name was Roman. And for those of you football junkies out there, you are just jonesing for Thursday with round 1 of the NFL draft on tap. And as your listeners know, throughout the course of the week, different positions have been highlighted in the RTD, top 10 picks, so to speak, at those positions. And we've got a couple more today we're going to go at. I'm just going to give you their status, where they stand in that 10, as well as their school, their year, blah, 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 and their projected round. So we're going to start with running backs. And this is compiled by Eddie Brown for the San Diego Union-Tribune. And Eddie's opening sentence here says it all. With the decreased value of the running back position, it's likely the first ones won't come off the board until day 2. So keep that in mind. If you're watching round one and you don't see your favorite running back up there, there's a reason. So here, who Eddie picks as his top 10 here, he expects that the first running back off the board is going to be Jonathan Brooks, 6 foot, 216 pounds, sophomore from the University of Texas. And he's projected to go in rounds two or three. And that's where most of these guys sit at, two or three, three or four. Number two, Blake Corum, who is a senior at Michigan, the national champs. And he is 5'7", 205. At three, there's Trey Benson, a junior from Florida State, 6 foot, 216. At number four, Jalen Wright, a 5'10", 210-pounder, junior from Tennessee. Number five, Braylon Allen, a junior from Wisconsin, 6'1", 235. Number six, Marshawn Lloyd, a junior at USC, 5'8", 220. At number seven, Audric Estime, a junior from the University of Notre Dame, 5'11", 222. Audric Estime is the only guy that I have a lot of familiarity with. I saw him play in person a couple of times and watched him on TV almost every week. He's going to make somebody very happy. He is a very powerful runner. He's projected to go in the third or fourth round. Number eight, Ray Davis, a 5'8", 211-pound senior from Kentucky. Number nine, a familiar name to ACC fans, Will Shipley, a junior from Clemson, 5'11", 206 pounds. And finally, Isaiah Davis, a senior from South Dakota State, 6 foot, 218 pounds. So those are your top 10 running backs that Eddie Brown from the San Diego Union-Tribune expects to go in the draft. Now, if we change gears here, Eddie is now going to take a peek at offensive tackles and interior linemen. So we'll start with the offensive tackles. And number one, you know, this is no surprise. He's number one on every single board I've looked at. And that's Joe Ault, a 6'8", 321-pound junior from Notre Dame. Man, we would love to have Joe Ault come back for a senior year. That ain't going to happen. And he is going to be a top 10 pick. He is projected to go to the Tennessee Titans. You know, we both know there's going to be a lot of shuffling of the deck here before Thursday. So who knows? But he's going in the top 10, no matter what. At number two, Olu Fashanu. Yes. A junior from Penn State. He is 6'6", 312. He looks like he's going in the top 15. At number three, Talies Fuaga. He's a junior from Oregon State. 6'5", 324. He's going in the first round. At number four, J.C. Latham. 6'5", 342. From Alabama. He's a junior. He's expected to go in round one. At number five, Amarius Mims, a 6'7", 340-pound junior from Georgia. He's projected to go in round one or two. At number six, Kingsley Suamatala. He's a sophomore, 6'4", 326 from BYU. At number seven, Patrick Paul, 6'7", 331-pounder, a junior from Houston. At number eight, Tyler Guyton, a junior from Oklahoma who weighs in at 6'7", 322 pounds. At number nine, Jordan Morgan, a senior from Arizona, 6'5", 311 pounds. And finally, number 10, Roger Rosengarten, a junior from Washington at 6'5", 308. So there are your top 10 tackles. Pretty amazing. The runt of the litter there is Roger Rosengarten at 308 pounds. You know, 25 years ago, a 300-pounder on the line was almost unheard of. But now, if you aren't 300-plus, look at Joe Ault. You know, 6'8", 321. Let's see, Talies Fuaga, 6'5", 324. J.C. Latham, 6'5", 342. These guys are huge. Man. Okay, let's take a look at the interior linemen. And the top 10 starts with number 1, Troy Fuantanu. He's a senior at Washington, 6'3", 317. He's expected to go in the first round. At number 2, Zach Frazier, a 6'2", 315-pounder, a senior from West Virginia. He's projected to go in rounds 2 to 3. Graham Barton, a senior from Duke, 6'5", 311. He's projected to go in the first round. At number 4, Jackson Powers Johnson, a junior from Oregon, who checks in at 6'3", 328. He's projected to go in rounds 1 or 2. At number 5, Cooper Beebe, a senior from K-State, Kansas State, 6'3", 322. He's projected to go in the second round. Number 6, Christian Haynes, a 6'2", 317-pound senior from Connecticut. At number 7, he's projected to go in the second or third round. Number 7, Tenor Bortolini, a senior from Wisconsin, 6'4", 303, projected to go rounds 2 to 4. At number 8, Cedric Van Prangranger, a junior from Georgia, 6'4", 298, and he is expected to go in rounds 3 or 4. At number 9, Christian Mahogany, a senior from Boston College, 6'3", 314, projected likewise rounds 3 to 4. And finally, number 10, Mason McCormick, a senior from South Dakota State, 6'4", 309. He's expected to go in rounds 4 or 5. So for more in-depth info that is available online, on multiple websites. There are your top 10 running backs, tackles, and interior linemen. Okay, let's stay inside, the RTD for this next story. Orange rally to top Cavs. Syracuse scores final 4 goals of game. U of R edges UMass. This is from the staff reports and wire services. Sam English scored the game-winning goal with 48 seconds remaining to lift number 7 Syracuse to an 18-17 win over number 4 Virginia on Saturday in Syracuse, New York. English's goal capped a 4-goal run by the Orange, who are now 11-4, 3-1 in the ACC, to end the game. The Cavaliers, who are now 10-3, 1-2 in the ACC, gained possession twice in the final 45 seconds, but Syracuse forced a turnover, and goaltender Will Mark, with 15 saves, denied Jack Boyden's shot with 7 seconds left to end UVA's hopes of forcing overtime. Connor Schellenberger recorded a game-high 9 points, finishing with 4 goals and 5 assists to lead the Cavaliers. Peyton Cormier, with 4 goals and 1 assist, and McCabe Millen, 3 goals and 2 assists, also had strong showings for Virginia. After not recording a save in the first quarter, UVA goalie Matthew Nunez finished with 15 saves, including 8 in the third quarter. Anthony Gobriel won 15 of his 26 attempts at the faceoff X. Owen Hiltz recorded 8 points on 3 goals and 5 assists to lead Syracuse. Virginia took a 17-14 lead with 9:18 to go on a man-up goal from Ryan Colsey, but was held scoreless the rest of the way. Syracuse tied the game with 1:44 remaining when Billy Dwan collected a loose ball rebound and flicked an over-the-shoulder shot that got past Nunez. 50 seconds later, English delivered the game winner for the Orange. "What a game of runs," Virginia coach Laura Tiffany said. "Unfortunately, Syracuse had the last one, scoring those last 2 goals at the end of the game in the last 2 minutes." The Cavaliers wrap up the regular season by hosting number 1 Notre Dame on Saturday in a rematch of the 2023 NCAA semifinals. And elsewhere, Lance Madonna and Aiden O'Neill scored 3 goals apiece as the visiting Richmond Spiders held off the Massachusetts Minutemen in an Atlantic 10 lacrosse game. Dalton Young, Luke Graham, and Lucas Olson added 2 goals each for U of R, who are now 9-4, 4-0 in the A-10, which took control by outscoring UMass, who are now 6-6, 2-2 in the conference, 7-1 in the third quarter. Young added 4 assists. The Spiders closed their regular season schedule next Saturday against St. Joseph's, who are 9-3, 4-0 in the conference, at Robins Stadium, in a game that will decide the A-10's regular season champion. UMass will host the A-10 tournament the following week. So here is your lacrosse scoreboard from yesterday. The number one Fighting Irish were hosting North Carolina yesterday, and the Irish took down the Tar Heels 14-6. Elsewhere, Lehigh defeated number 20 Boston University 13-12 in OT. Number 9, Cornell over number 18, Harvard, 15-8. Number 16, St. Joe's, defeated St. Bonnie's, 24-3. Richmond, ranked number 15, defeated UMass, 14-12. Number 7, Denver over Providence, 7-4. Number 14, Towson over Monmouth, 17-2. Number 11, Georgetown, defeated St. John's, 20-6. Number 19, Delaware over Drexel, 13-6. Syracuse over Virginia, 18-7. Number 3, Johns Hopkins defeated number 5, Maryland, 7-5. Those two schools are right down the street from each other. And finally, number 17, Princeton defeated number 13, Pennsylvania, 15-10. In case you didn't get this, Friday there were games as well. Number 10, Penn State over Rutgers, 15-9. Number 8, Yale defeated Albany, 17-10. And number 12, Army over Bucknell, 19-11. So your lacrosse top 10 looks like this. Notre Dame is a unanimous number 1, collecting all 25 votes. They are 8-1. Their only loss was a shocker at home in overtime to Georgetown. So we'll see. They seem to be hitting on all cylinders right now. Number 2 is Duke at 11-3. Number 3, Johns Hopkins at 9-3. Number 4, Virginia at 10-2. Number 5, Maryland at 8-3. Number 6, Syracuse at 10-4. Number 7, Denver at 9-2. Number 9, Yale at 9-2. Number 8, Yale. Number 9, Cornell at 7-4. And number 10, Penn State at 8-3. Those obviously will change a little bit. Those are this past week's rankings, not the updated ones. So they'll change a little bit with this past weekend's action, but, expect Notre Dame still to be number 1. NASCAR this week, rolls into, rural Alabama for the Geico 500 at Talladega Super Speedway. It's 188 laps, 500 miler. The defending champ is Kyle Busch. The green flag for this race is at 3 p.m. and, as usual, will be on Fox TV and AM 1140 radio. Okay, shifting gears here. If you do not pay attention to golf, and it's kind of hard to with the men anyway because the Masters just ended, the women also have a dominant player on their hands at the moment, as do the men. Scottie Scheffler on the big tour and Nelly Korda on the LPGA seem to be kicking tail and taking names here. And we have a quick story on this from the wire services. Masters champion Scottie Scheffler was relentless as ever, with another bogey-free round at the RBC Heritage in Hilton Head Island, South Carolina, an 8-under 63 that gave him a one-shot lead and left him one round from joining some rare company. Not since Bernard Langer in 1985 has a Masters champion won the following week on the PGA Tour at Harbortown. The only other Masters champion to win the week after was Gary Player in 1978 at the Tournament of Champions. Scheffler was at 16 under 197. Sepp Straka made a 15-foot birdie putt on the last hole for a 65 to get within one shot. Two-time major champ Colin Morikawa had a 68 and was two shots behind. And over on the LPGA Tour, Nelly Korda was one shot off the lead at the Chevron Championship in the Woodlands, Texas, when the third round was suspended Saturday because of lightning in the area. Korda, who was trying to tie an LPGA Tour record with her fifth straight victory, was at 341 through 11 holes in the third round and 10 under overall in the LPGA's first major of the season. She entered Saturday one shot off the lead after posting a 7 under 137 through the first two rounds. Athea Thirakul had the lead at 11 under and was through 12 holes when play was suspended. Folks, these two players, Scottie Scheffler and Nelly Korda, they are in what in sports you call the zone. And my goodness, this is very special to watch. And Scottie Scheffler, if he wins again this week, it'll be four out of the last five tournaments that he wound up as the winner with that that other tournament. He was the runner-up. So we haven't seen dominance like this since the heyday of Tiger Woods, so enjoy it while you can. As we said at the top of the show, the NHL playoffs have gotten underway, as have the NBA playoffs. We'll start on the ice, though. And last night, there were two games. The Carolina Hurricanes are, by many pundits, considered to be the favorite for the Cup this year. They opened at home against the New York Islanders with a 3-1 victory and now lead that series 1-0. The other game and the other team that people talk about are the Boston Bruins, of course. And the Bruins opened up with a relatively easy win over the Toronto Maple Leafs, 5-1. In today's action, Tampa Bay travels across town, I shouldn't say across town, partway across state, to play their intrastate rivals, the Florida Panthers. That is a 12:30 drop. And the Panthers are favored in that game. The home team usually is. Speaking of home teams and heavy favorites, at 3 o'clock, the Rangers will entertain the Capitals in the Garden for the opening game of their series. Same with Florida and Tampa Bay. This is the opening game. And the Caps, of course, snuck in at the very end of the season, a couple days ago. And they are very substantial underdogs in this first series. Elsewhere, tonight, Sunday night, Winnipeg will entertain Colorado, and Vancouver will host the Predators. That is a 10 o'clock drop in Vancouver. All right, moving on to the NBA. As you know, Friday night, the Heat defeated the Bulls and the Pelicans over the Kings to cement themselves into the NBA playoffs as the number 8 seeds. And, of course, the reward for that is that they get the number 1 seed as their first-round opponent. More on that in a second. But in last night's action, things got underway in both the East and the West. In the early games, the Cleveland Cavaliers defeated the Orlando Magic 97-83. Spida, Donovan Mitchell, dropped 30 in that game on the Magic. Elsewhere, the Wolves defeated the Suns 120-95. And they got 33 points out of Anthony Edwards, so great game by their young star. Elsewhere, in one of the heavyweight battles, the Knicks and the Sixers went at it in the Garden. And the Knicks prevailed 111-104. Great game. Joel Embiid is playing. He is sort of just kind of grinding through this. His knee is still causing him a lot of problems. I watched a little bit of that game yesterday, and he doesn't move as well as he usually does. But it's going to be a great series. And so the Knicks are up 1-0 in that series. And the most anticipated game of the night, again, a rematch from last year's first round. The Denver Nuggets are hosting the L.A. Lakers. Lakers are the number 7 seed, the Nuggets number 2, and the Nuggets defeated the Lakers 114-103. Nikola Jokic, just a terrific game, 32 points, 12 rebounds, 7 assists, 2 steals. Guy was just amazing. Anthony Davis had 34 points and 14 boards and 5 assists for the Lakers. The other 4 series will be getting underway on Sunday, the early game, the 1 o'clock tip. The Boston Celtics will be hosting the Miami Heat. As far as I know, the Heat does not have Jimmy Butler for this, at least for this game, probably for this series from what I understand, which may explain why the Celtics are a 14.5-point favorite in this game. Wow. Elsewhere, the Clippers entertain the Mavericks, 3:30 tip. The Bucks entertain the Pacers, a 7 o'clock tip. And finally, the Thunder will be entertaining the Pelicans. That is a 9:30 tip. And to give you some sense of where the Bucks are these days, again, I'm not sure the Giannis is playing in this series. Probably not this game, but in any event, the Pacers on the road are 1.5-point favorite, so think about that. Over in Major League Baseball yesterday, the Yankees said goodbye to John Sterling yesterday with a very nice ceremony at the stadium. Sterling, their longtime announcer, retiring. But the Yankees didn't do their part. They were shut out by the Rays 2-0 in 10 innings. Nice pitching matchup between Nestor Cortes and Zach Eflin. It was also bobblehead day yesterday at the stadium for Aaron Judge, who was booed by Yankee fans after striking out 4 times. And said Judge after the game, I've heard worse. So, Rays over the Yanks, 2-0. Elsewhere, the Twins defeated the Tigers 4-3. The Brewers bombed the Cardinals in St. Louis 12-5. The Marlins over the Cubs 3-2 in Wrigley. The Red Sox on the road defeated the Pirates 4-2. The Mets over the Dodgers in L.A. 6-4. The Nationals bounced back and defeated the Astros 5-4 and 10. The Giants over the D-backs 7-3. The Phillies defeated the White Sox 9-5. The Guardians over the Athletics 6-3. The Reds defeated the Angels 7-5. The Orioles over the Royals 9-7. The Braves defeated the Rangers 5-2. The Cubs over the Marlins 5-3. The Mariners shut out the Rockies 7-0. The Blue Jays over the Padres 5-2. In today's action, the early games, the Phillies and the White Sox will kick it off at 1:35. In Philly, Aaron Nola on the mound for the Phils. Elsewhere, the Pirates and the Red Sox continue their series in Pittsburgh. The Nats and the Astros, likewise an early start in D.C. The Yankees and the Rays likewise continue their series with a 1:35 start. Luis Gill on the mound for the Yanks and Aaron Civale for the Rays. The Guardians entertain the Athletics. The Reds host the Angels. The Orioles continue their series in KC with the Royals. The Twins host the Tigers. The Cardinals entertain the Brewers. The Marlins and the Cubs go at it in Wrigley, a 2:20 start in Wrigley. The Rockies host the Mariners. The Diamondbacks and the Giants continue their series in San Francisco. The Padres host the Blue Jays. Joe Musgrove on the mound for the Pods. The Dodgers and the Mets in Chavez Ravine. Tyler Glasnow on the mound for the Dodgers. The Braves and the Rangers go at it. This is an evening game, 7 o'clock. And then later tonight at 8:10, the Rockies will host the Mariners. So on Friday, if you'll remember, I read you a story about Justin Verlander coming off of the injured list to have his first start of the year against the Nats, and which in which he was victorious. But let's talk about that a little bit. Verlander sparkles in season debut. Nats limited to 2 runs and 6 innings by Astros righty. This is by Byron Kerr for the AP. Dateline Washington, D.C. Justin Verlander allowed 2 runs and 4 hits over 6 innings in the 3-time Cy Young Award winner's season debut for the Houston Astros, a 5-3 victory over the Washington Nationals on Friday night. The 41-year-old right-hander, who began the season on the injured list because of right shoulder inflammation, struck out 4 and walked none, throwing 50 of 78 pitches for strikes. Verlander, a former Goochland High School and ODU standout, averaged 94.3 miles per hour with 35 four-seam fastballs and induced 5 groundouts. The 9-time All-Star retired the side in order 4 times. He looked really good, Astros manager Joe Espada said. Efficient, threw a ton of strikes. Verlander averaged 94.3 miles per hour with 35 four-seam fastballs and induced 5 groundouts, and this is a repeat of the last paragraph. He retired the first 8 batters before Riley Adams doubled off the base of the right field wall in right center field. Yeah, I'm pleasantly surprised, honestly, Verlander said. I kind of tried to cram spring training into 3 rehab starts, and control wasn't quite what I would have liked. Just look at mechanics and try to find something to make it click. I think what I worked on between the last start and this start, just being a little more directional. Jeremy Peña and Mauricio Dubon had 3 hits each. Yanier Diaz doubled twice, and Kyle Tucker doubled, singled, walked twice, and stole 2 bases for Houston. The Astros stole a total of 5 bases. Verlander gave up an RBI single to Ildemaro Vargas in the 3rd inning, and a homer to Adams in the 4th that cut Washington's deficit to 4-2. Command and control was on, Astros manager Joe Espada said. The shape of his slider was good. He threw a couple of good changeups, fastball up to 94 miles an hour, and there's more there in the tank that eventually will come. But for him, he can just hit his spots and he'll keep you off balance. He was excellent, he said of Verlander. He was executing his pitches and following the plan that we had. Obviously, he was able to execute the curveball wherever he wanted to, but I thought all of his pitches were very good today. The win was the 258th of Verlander's career, leaving him 2 behind Ted Lyons for 41st on the career list. His 4 strikeouts gave him 3,346 for his career, which ranks 12th all-time. He's 21 strikeouts behind Max Scherzer, who is on Texas's injured list, and 25 away from Greg Maddux, and joining the all-time top 10 in that category. So there you have it. Just enjoy Justin Verlander for as long as we have him. It isn't going to be many more seasons. But just enjoy his brilliance and watch him rack up those numbers, because his next stop is Cooperstown, New York. Well, that's all of our time for the reading of today's sports section from the Richmond Times-Dispatch. Thank you for spending the last hour with me. I'm Thomas Eichler for the Virginia Voice. Have a great day, everyone.